Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Black Label presents Heavy Montreal, the heaviest festival in Canada. Back for a 10th edition. 2 days of rock and metal. July 27th and 28th, outdoors at Parc Jean Drapeau. Witness Slayer perform their last show in Quebec ever. Performances by Ghost, Godsmack, Evanescence, Slash, Anthrax, Steel Panther, Killswitch Engage, and many more. 40 bands playing 4 stages on a festival site that you have to see to believe. Festival passes are on sale now. Visit HeavyMontreal.com. Produced by Avanco.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. We have Ian Hill from Judas Priest on the show today. But before we get into the actual interview and episode, I want to give a shout out to the actual people who support this podcast. And they do that via Patreon. I know some of you prefer the PayPal donations, and those are still cool. But if you want to, you know, give a PayPal donation, just go to talkingrock.net. You can do it from there. And if you want to join me on Patreon, it's patreon.com/talkingmetal. That is what supports all the videos that Emily and I do and all the podcasts that we do. Of course, there's this one, Talking Metal, the most popular of the bunch. Then we have Talking Rock that I do with Joey Haney. And then there's an exclusive one that only the patrons get on Patreon, and it is the Mark Striegel podcast. So, and I do that with Victor Ruiz. So there's all sorts of stuff going on. And just, again, thank you to all you people on Patreon. I completely appreciate your support. And you, of course, are Anthony Mackey, At Metal Dan, Drake, Emma Clayton, Fred Rutz, Jerry from Long Island, James Bennett, Jason Seth, Jay Vaninsky, J.B. Allen, Jean Francois, Blias, Joe, John Bouvoiri, Matt Carroll, Michael Street, Mike Jones, Mr. David Gray, Miles Atwood, Patrick Schwartz, Ralph Petrie, Ron Keel, Sam Soupy, Sean Morgan, Steve Hoker, Steven Saylor, you guys rock, and of course Victor Ruiz is on Patreon with us doing his thing, helping me run the page there. And what a blast we're having. I love the polls. I love the exclusive videos we're giving you, the exclusive podcast. There's different tiers. You get different types of rewards depending on what tier you sign up for. And one of our patrons, Ron Keel, man, I just got to do his podcast. So that was pretty exciting and cool. And I'll definitely let you know when that interview's up. Okay. So here we go. Let's start the episode.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
I'll be there.
classic Judas Priest, Diamonds and Rust, the Joan Baez cover. Yeah, man, love that tune. And, you know, when I was a kid, I went back and I traced it back because I loved that song so much. I said, I got to hear the original. And, man, I don't know. The original's good, but the Joan Baez original. But, man, that's what it's all about for me, the Judas Priest version of that song. Green Man Alishi was also a cover. And they, again, did the same thing with that one. The Fleetwood Mac version just doesn't even hold a candle to the Priest version. Priest rocking out some good covers when they do it, with maybe the exception of Johnny B. Goode. I think I got a pass on that one, you know. But anyways, we have Ian Hill, the bassist of Judas Priest. He's been there since the beginning. This is the founding member, one of the founding members of the band. And yeah, what an honor to talk to him. I know we had him on once before saying, hey, this is Ian Hill and you are of Judas Priest and you are listening to Talking Metal. But we never had an actual interview. We had like an ID. So without further ado, let's get into this interview with the one and only Ian Hill. Big thanks to Jen from Chipster for helping set this up. This is No Surrender off Firepower, a little sound sample of this song. I encourage you to go buy the whole thing on iTunes, stream it on Amazon Music or Spotify or wherever you do your music, YouTube Music, you know how to do it. So again, No Surrender off of the album that came out last year, Firepower by Judas Priest, a great, great album. So let's check it out and hear from Ian Hill. It's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and what an honor. For the first time ever on the podcast, we have the one, the only, Ian Hill of Judas Priest. How are you, man?
I'm fine, thanks. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm excited. You guys are about to hit the road once again here in the States with Uriah Heep for a pretty extensive tour, and you teased a little song online the other day, Rapid Fire, off of British Steel, which I'm psyched to hear that. I'm imagining that's probably going to be in the set list because you guys were rehearsing it there. How different will the set list be this tour?
It's going to be quite a lot different, to be honest. We've already been around twice.
Right.
So we thought we'd better shake it up a little bit, you know. So there'll be, maybe eight, as many as nine new songs in the set.
Wow.
We'll be doing some off the new record and some of the old favorites and some that we haven't played for a long time, you know. So it'll be something new for everyone with a bit of luck.
Awesome. That's amazing. And I think that's a great idea to keep the fans interested in coming back for more. I can't wait to hear some of these. So you're when you go back and learn some of these songs that you haven't played in years and years, I mean, do you just listen to it and you kind of say, oh, I remember what I did there? Or do you actually have to sit down and relearn them from scratch?
Yeah, I've sort of had to sit down. Yeah. There's just been so many songs over the years, you know. If it's a song that we've done compatibly recently, within the last, I don't know, 5, 6 years, 10 years even, you know, it comes back easily, easier than it would do. But some of the ones, you know, some of the early ones that we haven't played for decades or maybe even, ever before, you're not familiar with them anymore and you have to sort of start again. So it doesn't take long, you know, it all comes back quickly.
Right on. And Andy is doing a great job with you guys. I really enjoyed seeing him play the last two times I've seen you live. And how long do you imagine he'll be continuing on with Priest? Is he still a temporary member? Is he more permanent at this point?
It's something to be discussed, really. I mean, Andy is now, these days, first and foremost, a producer. Whether he wants to, go back to doing that full time or not, you know. It's it'll be a mutual decision when the time comes. I mean, Andy will be more than welcome to stay. He's done a tremendous job over the last year or so, really, you know. He's done a great job stepping in for Glenn. It would have been very difficult if he hadn't have been there at such short notice, you know, because we didn't realise that Glenn couldn't handle, the intensity of touring anymore until, you know, I mean, we were only about 3 weeks away from starting the tour.
Yeah.
And Andy stepped in, you know, did a great job. He pulled a real rabbit out of the hat, you know, in learning a complete set list of songs in such a short period of time. But he pulled it off anyway, you know.
Yeah.
And as time's got on, obviously his stage presence, he got more sort of comfortable with that. And he's performing great now, you know. So when the time comes, I mean, we'll give it to the end of this run and then see what everybody wants to do, you know. But as I say, he'll be more than welcome to carry on with us if that's his plan.
Right. Okay. So the decision is basically up to him.
Yeah. 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 Pretty much so.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll understand either way. I mean, you know. I mean, he put some work aside to do this, and obviously he's anxious to get back and finish that off. Although he's probably doing some of that now as we speak.
Right.
In this short break that we've got. But like I say, you know, if he wants to continue, that's entirely up to him, really.
But at this point, you guys don't have anyone in mind or anyone you're looking at that could potentially step in to replace him?
No, not at the time being, no. I mean, the plan at the moment is to go to the end of the US run. That'll take us up to the end of June. And we were going to do some rearranged Ozzy Osbourne dates. We were special guesting with him.
Right.
But he unfortunately got rather sick, you know, and had to cancel. And that's now being pushed back to February. So we've pretty much got the rest of the year off to sit back and you know, see where we go from here, you know. The plan, obviously, is to tour next year with 50-year celebrations. And if Andy's with us, great. If he wants to carry on with his producing, I mean, we'll more than understand that. He's done a tremendous job, and he'll go with, you know, with everyone's blessing. But like I say, we'll put time to consider that over the next few months or so.
Absolutely. And you guys are heading out with Uriah Heep, who is a band that's been around a very long time. Have you had any history with them? Do you know Mick and the guys? How well do you know Uriah Heep?
They worked with us just recently. Not a very long run, but they did some work, I believe, some American shows. And we've run into each other over the past 18 months or so in Europe, you know, some of the festivals and what have you. We know them very mildly. I mean, we've met and we know them to nod to in the street sort of thing. But with this tour, you know, we can forge some decent friendships there. We admire their work, you know. Of course, their reputation precedes them, and we're looking forward to working with them.
Absolutely. In the past, I've done interviews with Glenn and with KK, and I've always asked them about the Turbo record, because among some of your fan base, the record was always a little controversial with the, you know, different image, and the keyboards were a little more prominent, commercial hooks, really, you know, with the songwriting. And both of those guys told me they really, really like that record a lot. And I wanted to get your opinion, looking back on that record these many years later. How do you view the Turbo record?
Well, I mean, underneath all the keyboards and what have you, you know, I mean, it's a great heavy metal album.
Yeah, I agree.
The material's great. I know you've already spoken with Ken and Glenn, so they'll probably tell you we had first option on the Roland guitar synthesizer, you know.
Right.
And we took that up, probably overdid it, but. But it was, I don't know, it was a experimental. We were looking for, we've always tried to take a step forward and, you know, looking for something different with every album. And we've got a tough act to follow, really, after Defenders of the Faith. And this came along and we thought, maybe that's it, you know. And as you say, it had mixed reception. I mean, it lost us some fans and it sort of gained us some new ones, I suppose. So it was good and bad in equal measures from that point of view. But yeah, there's some great songs on there. There's some great songs on Turbo, and it was a great great project, really. Obviously, after that, we went with a harder edge with Ram It Down. And obviously, I followed up that one with Painkiller. And I think carried on from there when Rob came back to the band in 2004, you know. I like the album. I like it. There's some good songs on there. Great songs.
Absolutely. I agree. And, you know, back in the day when I was a kid listening to Judas Priest, a teenager, it seemed like you didn't really do a lot of the interviews. But in more recent times, it seems like you're doing more interviews for the band. Is it something you're more comfortable with nowadays, doing actual press?
Well, yeah, I've always been comfortable with it, really. It's just that everybody seemed to wanted to speak to either Rob Kinn or Glenn in those days. So, you know, obviously I didn't do so many of them. I did a lot of interviews with, you know, sort of with industry magazines and things like that, you know, with bass guitars, bass magazines and things. But a lot of people obviously wanted to talk to the three front men in the band.
Right on. And speaking of bass, what gear do you use? Is it a different setup when you're on stage versus the studio?
In the studio, it's very much pretty much straight into the board. And then, you know, various preamps here and there, depending on what song and what sounds we want. I mean, I've got use great bass guitars, Inspectors, you know, they're superb bass guitars. And they have a great natural sound without any processing whatsoever, you know. So getting the different sounds is quite easy, really. On stage, obviously, I just said Spectre Guitars. I've been with them now for, must be 30 years or so. I've been with Spectre, so 1986, I think I started wow. using them. An SWR amplification, some Triad cabinets, and various amplifiers, depending on where I'm playing, you know. It's anything ranging from about 900 to about 1,500 watts.
Awesome. Well, Ian, we really appreciate your time today. I know your schedule is very tight, so thanks for taking some time to talk to us. Before I let you go, we heard Rapid Fire, and it looked like you guys were rehearsing that in somebody's living room or something, and it sounded just great. Any clues you can give us as to maybe some other tracks that will end up in the set list?
It's early days as yet, but that's probably going to be one of them. I don't know, there'll be another couple off the new record as well. Let me see, maybe Traitor's Gate. We get it together a week beforehand, you know, before we start the tour in Florida. We're all learning various things, you know. There might be a necromancer in there somewhere or a spectre.
Nice.
And we'll we'll get the final set list once we start playing through them together as a band. I mean, we're just kicking them around at home in our own studios at the moment.
And where do you guys rehearse? Is that like some? Because it really looks like somebody's living room in that video.
I forget which one it was. That could be that's Andy Sneap's studio. That's
Oh, okay.
The live room at Andy Sneap's studio in Backstage Studios up in Derbyshire in Britain.
Right on.
Don't call it a front room, though. You won't like that.
Okay. Fair enough. Ian, you have
We've been using Andy's place, since he's been involved with the band. Sort of made sense. He's got a lot of equipment up there, you know. That's where we recorded that.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for your time today, Ian, and we cannot wait to see you on the tour here in the States, starting real soon, the beginning of May, and running through the end of June, Judas Priest out on tour with Uriah Heep. Thank you, Ian.
Okay, cheers, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Talk to you soon.
Devil by Judas Priest. Always love that song. Going back, that is, of course, on that particular song, you got KK Downing, Glenn Tipton, two guys who are no longer playing with the band, sadly, and of course, Ian Hill on the bass on that one, right? So always love the Priest, always love Judas Priest. Looking forward to the tour that's coming around. And the first time I ever saw Judas Priest was, of course, with Dokken opening on the, I guess that was the Fuel for Life tour, which was at the Rosemont Horizon in the Chicago suburbs, Rosemont, Illinois. That was, let's see, that was 1986, August 11th, according to Wikipedia right here. August 11th, 1986. I know I still have my ticket stub somewhere upstairs. Still have the Fuel for Life Judas Priest t-shirt. Maybe that'll make it onto a future episode of This Old Rock Shirt, which is a YouTube show that Emily and I do. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Again, This Old Rock Shirt. It is hosted by myself and my wife, Emily Striegel, and we talk about old rock shirts. So it's a lot of fun, man. We just did one on Motley Crue, so definitely check that out. Again, on the Talking Metal YouTube page, which is youtube.com/talkingmetal, This Old Rock Shirt. Again, so the first time I saw Priest was in 1986 on the Fuel for Life tour, which was for the Turbo album, an album that I personally love. I know it was kind of controversial, but it's good. It's great stuff. Everyone, you know, I spoke to Glenn Tipton about it many years ago. I spoke to KK about it, and they both seem to really love that record, which is cool because I do. And I know there's some of the hardcore fans that got freaked out that they, you know, changed their image a little bit and added some synthesizer. But if that is enough to turn you off to an album, I think you're the one with the problem. What, you can't get into an album because the band goes a little glammy? That affects your ability to listen to the music? I always thought that was absolutely ridiculous. If you can't listen to a band because you think they look too glammy, that is so stupid. And that's there were so many thrashers that were such posers because they couldn't accept anything that wasn't in their little thrash metal view of the world. I'm going back, you know, 30 years at this point. I think we're all a little bit more open-minded now. But yeah, Turbo, I loved that record. It was a great record. And anyways, the band that opened the long-winded way to get to the next song, huh, guys? The band that opened the night was a band called Dokken. And I loved Dokken. It was the first time I got to see them live, the first time I saw Priest live. And it was a great night. I had bought two tickets that were like nosebleed seats. But then I ended up winning two seats for the concert that were down front. Yeah. So it was great. And I ended up selling the two seats I had. One of them went to a friend of mine, and yeah, we all went to the show and wow, great memories, great memories. It was a great night. And Dokken played that night. And I believe they were, I want to say that was Under Lock and Key era for Dokken, which would have meant that the song I'm about to play was after that, but I'm going to hit it anyways. This is Dream Warriors, which again would have come out a couple years after they had toured, opening up for Priest on that Turbo tour, Fuel for Life. So anyways, if I'm making any sense, I feel like I'm kind of all over the place here, but here we go. Thanks for joining us, guys. Thanks to Ian Hill. This is Dream Warriors by Dokken.